honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
And it's a win that will thrill Gaelic fans, I'm sure, throughout the country. No disrespect to Dublin, but this will do a lot for Gaelic football. It will do a lot for the so-called weaker counties in a year where Clare emerged from Munster. Donegal came from Ulster, but the difference is they went the whole way.
So there you go, Colin. Ger Canning there, it'll do a lot for the so-called weaker counties. A very weird one, putting Donegal in the so-called weaker counties categories, but that's where they were.
It seems like that category gets bigger and bigger every year. Were they a weaker county? Like, they had won the Ulster in 1990. They got to the final the year before that, like 91, and lost the All-Ireland champions. They went on to go to three National League finals in a row. Like, a really, really strange one.
Yeah, it is a strange. Maybe, like, until the early 90s takeover by the Ulster counties, all Ulster counties were seen as so-called weaker counties.
Yeah, but then Down, I suppose, blazed the trail and put an end to that. Four years in a row, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Do you notice Martin McHugh wrestling the ball off the referee at the end of the game? He wanted it, yeah. And the ref wanted to bring it off. Martin McHugh wasn't letting go.
I put up a clip of it on Twitter there. It's probably an illegal one, to be honest with you. But I thought it was really weird. Like, I don't know what the ref was doing, but somebody said to me that it's practice for the referee to give the ball to the captain at the end of it. But like, the ref is really fighting for it off him. It was I don't know, it was bizarre.
It was bizarre, yeah, definitely was. Because Clare, obviously, Canning is talking about Clare, who won the Munster final that year too. Dublin had beaten them in the All-Ireland semi-final. Dublin were obviously unbackable favourites. Dublin did an open-top bus tour of O'Connor Street after beating Clare in an All-Ireland semi-final. Can you actually get your head around that? Tommy Carr refused to go on it, and I wouldn't blame him.
That's of all the decisions in the GAA down through the last 100 and whatever years, like, that's probably one of the worst ones of all time. Like, I don't know, did Dublin think that they had the whole thing won? Like, they had won two Leinsters themselves in the last 7 years, so it wasn't like they were coming in here like, you know, we've got the job done. Donegal, as we say, we're a good side coming in. The Donegal team that won the Ulster in 1990 are pretty much the same as this team in 92, so... That was really, I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know how the players let that go ahead. Imagine, like, that was brought up in the team meeting. Nobody would say go ahead with that.
Yeah, Desi Farrell was saying the whole thing was a disaster. We went down O'Connell Street and sure, there were people coming back from work and they were looking at us as if to say, what is this crowd at? Tommy Carr obviously was very experienced on that squad and he didn't go. You'd imagine that they all should have refused that. That was absolutely bizarre, you know? Like, I mean, it didn't make any sense. They had played each other in a league quarterfinal earlier on that year, and Donegal were winning by 5 points. Dublin got two late goals. So I don't know. Based on, like what you're saying, Donegal winning the Ulster in 1990, you know, only been a point. Dublin had needing two late goals to beat them in the league quarterfinal. You wonder how Dublin were going into this as unbackable favourites, really. Like, I mean... At the end of the day, Donegal were coming out of a very competitive Ulster. It just seems weird. Maybe the fact that Dublin came through Leinster and Meath had been knocked out by Laois, and you know Dublin came through a Leinster championship easily. And then accounted for Clare. It just looked like their name was on it or something.
Yeah, but like, yeah, that's another good point. If they had beaten Kerry or Cork, I suppose, at the time in the semi-final and had it open top, well, she would maybe understand it a bit more, be like, oh, well, they put out the big dogs, like, you know, that was a big skill to take. But to be clear, that was their second ever Munster title, their first one since 1917. So, like, surely they were expected to be clear as well, so I don't know what the celebrations were about. And obviously the fans didn't give a shit about it based on what Desi Farrell said. And Paul Curran had a good quote as well, saying, absolutely nobody turned up. We could have been on the 77A to Tala.
Unbelievable stuff. Absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. What did you make of the penalty? The penalty was a big turning point in the first half. Donegal took over. We'll analyse this in part two. But Colin Rourke said on commentary, it was a harmless enough penalty. I think Desi Farrell made the most of it. He definitely kind of flew back. Like, there was definitely, like, I don't want to use that word contact and go crazy, but for that era, 1992, it would go down in the category of a soft penalty.
Yeah, like, to be honest, when you watched the whole game, I suppose that's the context, the game. Like, if you looked at that now and you saw a penalty being given, you'd understand it. But when you watched that game, it's just, like, hits flying in. Like, you know, every time Vinnie Murphy won the ball, he was being fouled. Like, you know, so that was very soft. And, like, to be honest, I didn't notice it to start off with because there's so many late hits and hard hits going in. So yeah. When the ref stopped the game, I was wondering what the hell was he doing it for. I definitely, like, if they had not given it, like, I don't think it ever would have brought up again. You know, nobody would have thought that Dublin got screwed over there. And, like, Colin O'Rourke is on fire in his school camp. I actually think he's really missing from that job. Like, he talked about Martin McHugh's miraculous medal not helping him when he missed a free. And Terry Redmond hit one, like, blazed one out to the sideline, and he was like, he must have a problem with someone in the Ardcoria. but he was good in that role.
Ger Canning got a great laugh out of the Ardcoria joke, didn't he? Ger Canning was really splitting his sides laughing about. But it started a run of bad of penalty misses for Charlie Rednell. It didn't start it because he missed one in the 1988 Leinster final. Then he missed one obviously against Donegal. He missed one in the 1994 All Ireland final against Down as well. So, like, I mean, you know, he didn't have a good overconfidence, I would say, when going for the top corner like that. Like, I mean, there were 2 points up. That was going to put them 5 up. You know, it kind of played into the whole Dublin thought they could only show up and win this one.
Yeah, like, you never see a penalty struck like that. Like, with the instep, sort of trying to curl it into the top right corner. Like, that is real confidence. That's the stuff you fuck around with for training. Like, you know, I don't know, at what stage do you step in there and say that you don't want him hitting them anymore? Like, he's not going to score in a big game.
Yeah, no, definitely. So Hegarty was the one pushed Desi Farrell. It was an interesting bit of information in that Hegarty, Noel Hegarty and Desi Farrell were very good friends. They would have been in around the same age group. And Desi obviously has relations in Donegal. We've all seen the picture of himself and Seamus Coleman. And he used to train with Glenn Colum Kill, which was Noel Hegarty's club. So it was interesting to see that the two of them were marking each other. And it was funny, Noel Hegarty's on record for saying that after he gave away the penalty, John Joe Doherty fucked him out of it and started cleaning dirt out of his studs and throwing it at Desi Farrell.
Yeah, I was actually, I wouldn't put that past John Joe Doherty. Like, even just from that game, like, geez, he is manic, isn't he? I had him and Hegarty just written down. Like, probably, I don't know, will they be mentioned in performance of the weekend, but, like, just wholehearted players. And John Joe Doherty, like, I'm surprised that he wasn't in the team automatically, because, like, he would die for it. Like, he would literally die for it.
He was only in it because Shovlin got injured in the week leading up. And I'm surprised he wasn't injured by John Joe Doherty, actually, because John Joe Doherty knocked Declan Bonner out in training in the lead-up. Like, I mean, imagine a fella who's just primed for this All-Ireland final. Like, I mean, Jesus.
He is the sort of player that you want to stay the hell away from at training in the week up to a big game. You're just trying to keep yourself taken over, and then he's just running mad, trying to deliberately injure lads where he can get onto the team.
Exactly. Kavir, there's an incredible story coming out of this, and it is Joyce McMullen, who marked Paul Curran and was outstanding on Paul Curran. It's not like Joyce McMullen was outstanding himself, but I say his job was to keep Paul Curran quiet, and he did. There was none of Paul Curran's unbelievable runs up the field, you know, with his speed and his class, and he actually was started to really frustrate Curran to the point where Curran was spocking back at him, which wasn't kind of his game. But before the game, his brother Gerard had been battling cancer, and Brian McAniff got a message before the match to tell him that his brother Gerard, that Joyce's brother Gerard had died. So McAniff didn't know what to do before the game here. He says, do I tell Joyce about his brother, or do I say nothing? And McAniff decided to wait until after the final whistle to tell him. So in the dressing room then, everybody's jumping around and they're ecstatic and they're celebrating. And then this news broke that Gerard's brother was after passing away, and it took the sting out of the celebrations, and it was terrible. And then they found out that this was a lie, and that his brother was alive. I've never heard anything like this before in my life.
Yeah, like that's like a classic. People would scold social media nowadays, you know, for spreading these rumors and stuff. It's amazing to think that that's happening in 92. Like, so bizarre. Everything from Brian McInniff finding out and Joyce not finding out, and then McInniff withholding the information, and then telling them in the midst of their celebrations, and then not being true. Like, it's a horrible story. Like, I don't know what I would do if I was in Brian McInniff's shoes there. But I would definitely try and get it verified before I told somebody that their brother had passed away.
Yeah, no, definitely. Come here, Colin, we'll leave it there because Tony Boyle is after joining us on the line there now. Tony, we're talking about this unbelievable Joyce McMullen story. Do you remember that going around the dressing room after the match?
Yeah, Colin, but it was completely surreal. I remember after the match, I actually went upstairs in the Hogan Stand to do an interview at the local radio station, Highland Radio. So I was a wee bit late. Myself and Barry McGowan were a bit late getting into the dressing room. And the dressing room was still sort of fairly thronged with people. And I could remember McInniff and the doc, Austin, trying to get people out and got them out. And there was an eerie quietness, and you knew something was wrong. And I seen them getting Joyce, brought him into the old dressing room, very, very small, brought him into the shower area and told him, and you knew he was distraught. And obviously then we were told, and it just went from pure elation to everyone was just in complete shock, you know. And I remember it went from there. Then you go outside the old dressing rooms, and I remember meeting my own mother and father, and you know, they were just, everyone was going mad outside, but nobody realised what had happened and why everyone was so sad coming out of the dressing room, you know. And
yeah,
there was a bit of a murmur then. We spoke, you know, we were telling our own families what had happened, and everyone was sort of sad until eventually we met, I think it was Joyce's mother, and Joyce's sister, and she told Joyce that she had already spoken to Jared about half an hour before, and everything was grand. And but it was absolutely, it was a real high to a real low to back to a real high when we knew that Jared was okay.
But Jesus Christ! Really, and had you any suspects about who would have done that? Like, would that have been a Dublin supporter trying to throw you off, or was there any talk about where this came from?
Do you know what, Colin? We never really spoke about it afterwards. You know, because.
Right.
So there was no mention of it. There was no mention of, you know, Brian obviously knew beforehand, never mentioned it. You know, we were totally focused on the game itself, and obviously I had the elation afterwards, and I suppose Brian eventually knew that he had to tell Joyce this. And listen, after an All-Ireland final, there's cameras at the dressing room, and I would say it was probably a good hour after the actual final whistle before you got just the team and only the team, you know. And I suppose, looking back, you didn't really have the same sort of maybe crack in the dressing room that you would have had with the team when everyone got back together because of Brian having to break the news. But we never really, listen, we were just so happy afterwards again, Colin, when we got outside, when Joyce's sister confirmed that she'd been speaking to Jared, and that Jared was fine, you know. We never really discussed it afterwards. Listen, it wasn't discussed in my company anyway.
Right, right. Okay. You were very quietly confident going into this game, but you were given no chance at all, were you?
No, exactly. We were, listen, up until the semi-final against Mayo, it was all fairly new to me, Colin. I was only in the squad 2 years. I only came into the squad in 1990. And listen, I thought this happened every year. I played in All-Ireland semi-final in 1990 against Meath, and we lost Ulster final in 91. We won an Ulster final in 92, and now we're in an All-Ireland final. I thought this was quite normal for Donegal football, because I didn't really follow it much before he started playing. But we hadn't won a senior competitive match in Croke Park up until the Mayo match in the semi-final. And that was, you could see from the older players, that was a massive, massive monkey off the back. And listen, we trained very, very hard, and it was very intense. Like, I remember in one of the training sessions in the lead up to the final, that Declan was knocked out cold. John Joe had him on a shoulder, knocked him out cold, and a back three forwards. And the player's thing was just drag him off, get another man in, and we kept going. But you did get the stories coming from Dublin that Dublin were already preparing for their celebrations and that. So we were confident, and we were quietly confident with what our group could do. But also the fact that Dublin seemed to think it was only a matter of turning up, you know. So
yeah,
that probably was a bit of an advantage for us.
We were talking about on the show that at the start of the show there, that Dublin did an open top bus parade after their semi final against Clare. I'm sure you probably heard word of that.
We did hear about that, but we didn't know whether it was true or not. But we did see But I remember seeing pictures at the time, and I sent one recently, a picture to Vinnie Murphy, that the Leiters with Dublin 1992 All-Ireland champions on it. They were in circulation, and I think there was glasses as well, pint glasses with Dublin 1992 All-Ireland champions. Listen, that was extra motivation for us, you know. And I think, listen, you know, talking to Dublin players of the 92 Dublin players, you know, after they had finished up, you know, they did admit that they thought it was only a matter of turning up. You know, they thought that they were, out of the four teams that were left in the semi-final, they thought by far they were the strongest team left. You know, they definitely underestimated us.
Yeah, no, they definitely, you mentioned Vinnie Murphy there. Jeez, like, I mean, it was a tale of two 14s, two target men. Both men played well. Jeez, Keith Barr, a free off the ground and just launched. Now, they were way too obvious with this, but jeez, Vinnie Murphy was a freak of nature the way he was able to get up and claim those balls.
Unbelievable. I just watched the first half of it last night when I seen it up on YouTube, until my daughters told me that they realised that they thought I played a lot better than I actually did, so I turned it off. But Vinnie was unreal in the air, and like we knew that was part of our Dublin's ploy, that listen, Barr's going to kick a 60-70 yards, and if you watch some of the highlights, you'll see Malloy would have went back in front of Vinnie and Matt Taylor. But the amount of times Vinnie was fit to catch it over Malloy's head, which is not easy done. But like the second part of the plan, if Vinnie caught it, was we had to get men around him, you know, which we did. But Vinnie still won a hell of a lot of ball, and you know, had a couple of goal chances later on that if he'd get one of them, it might have been a different outcome. But we were glad we held out in the end.
Yeah, you definitely were. You played them in a league quarter final, and you had them beaten. You were 5 points up, and they got two late goals to beat you. So I suppose that would have given you confidence that you were a match for them.
But Colin, we were in a bad place at that time. We were 5 points up in injury time, and they got, I think Vinnie got one, and maybe Paul Clark, and the famous story went that Charlie Redmond came back out to Noel Hegarty and said, "It's never over till the fat lady sings." And I think that was in the back of Noel's mind, and I think he gave Charlie a touch late on in the final in 92 about the fat lady clearing her throat when it was going down to the last couple of minutes. But we lost that quarter of the final, Colin. We played Monaghan and Ballybay the following week in McKenna Cup match, and we were beat out the gate. And listen, as I said, I was only new to the thing, and it was a fairly, fairly low ebb. And to be fair to the wee man, he spoke in the dressing room that day in Ballybay to say, "Listen, we're not training hard enough. We need to put in a bigger effort." And I would look back and I would think that was a massive turning point in our season, because we had a lot of players that were looking at possibly retiring in the next, you know, the next number of months. And they went into that championship of 1992 of, you know, everyone's going to give it everything, especially the older guys, and that, you know, this could be, every game could be their last game. And I think sort of we played through that championship like that, you know, and especially the older boys give that bit extra, you know, to make sure that this wasn't their last ever any of the championship games wasn't going to be their last day out in a Donegal jersey, you know. And I think it helped us in the end up.
Yeah, you had a shaky start to the game. You had an early wide after a brilliant run that normally you tap over. Martin McHugh had a free, early free that he missed, and then he took a quick free and it was intercepted. And if you were watching the game live, you'd be thinking, geez, Donegal are nervous here, and Dublin had started the better.
Yeah, Colin, as I said, I watched a bit of it the first half of last night, and it did look very much like that way. You know, I missed an easy chance. Martin missed a free that normally he'd score. I think really it wasn't until Charlie missed the penalty that we probably maybe settled down. That probably gave us a bit of a lift, and it was a downer for them. And Martin, I think, kicked a very good score when he ran directly at Barr and kicked it over the bar. So, hey, we were nervous, I suppose. First time ever in an Ireland final, it was always going to be a big occasion. But I think when we did settle down then, you know, I think we started playing a bit of the football, and probably that 20 minute spell before half time where we kicked maybe 6 or 7 points, maybe not in a row, but six or seven very good points to give us a bit of a lead going into half time. I think that was a big part of the game for us then. We got in at half time then and we got settled down, you know. But it was a nervous start, but probably taking into account it was her first All-Ireland, it was probably to be expected.
Yeah, geez, you're right. The penalty miss really did spark you into life, and you completely dominated midfield then after that. Malloy and Murray just cleaned up altogether. It's like every kick out John O'Leary kicked was being sent back in on top of him.
I think everyone, you know, when you talk about the 92 final, everyone remembers Manus's performance and the 9 points. But when you do watch it again, Malloy had a massive 70 minutes. He got a power work around the middle. And to be fair to Brian, to Big Sham around the middle with him, you know, Brian, up until he got hurt, done very well. And I suppose the added bonus, Colin, was, you know, we took Barry Cunningham off the bench, and Barry played very, very well in that. In that
excellent, 20 minutes.
So, you know, we probably struggled for them first couple of, as I say, 10 minutes around the middle of the field as well, but the boys completely, and that was the platform then that sort of set us on our way, even though I would still say as a full forward, Malloy still sent some Hail Marys in around the square. At times you didn't know where they were going, you had to second guess and trying to be on them, but they put in a savage 70 minutes around midfield for us. That's for sure.
Did he come here? You won the throw in the very first half, and Malloy got it, and he kind of no look passed it straight down the middle. Was that a set move? You came out and won it. I'm just wondering, was that a pre practice move, or were they on the go back then?
Well, I don't think it's like a no look pass like Ronaldinho or Ronaldo would do, but no. To be fair, our plan was won the kick out and Martin would drop a wee bit short and leave the space in front of me, and it was that was the plan, just get it straight into me. And I was delighted because my game, I would always base my game, Colin, I try and win the first ball, put the doubt in the full back, and I managed to win it, draw the free of Jerry Harrigan.
Yeah.
I would have been disappointed because Martin normally, like, I thought it was further out until I seen it again last night. Like, it was a good 5 yards inside, and Martin had his ease, would have normally, but I suppose that was a bit of nervousness again, you know, but that was our ploy. Won the throw in, get it into me. Declan Manus were normally hoping I would get absolutely mauled and in front of the goals, and both of them would sprint in to see who would get the handy tap over free. That was normally how it used to pan out. But no, that was the play from the throw-ins, right?
Well, I'd say you were fuming when he missed that free, because there's nothing worse than winning a good free and then for it to be missed is like all your work has gone to waste.
I'll tell you, Colin, when you were playing in that full forward lane for a couple of years, you got used to it. You got absolutely used to it. As I used to tell the lads, you'd be lying up after maybe Conor Deegan or Mick Lyons or someone after nearly cutting you in two, and Manus and Declan pulling the ball off you to see who could get the handy tap over free. But listen, as long as it went over the bar in the end up, that was the main thing.
I thought you played there was a few kind of Hail Mary balls went in, but we did a show on the 96 final last week, and there was way more in that. I thought you played for that era, 92, you did play some nice controlled football, you know, as well. I thought Dublin were the one launching kind of Hail Mary balls more than Donegal.
To be fair, Colin, we did. Probably, as I said, that first 10 minutes were, you know, there was nerves and it was a matter of maybe trying to get the ball in as early as possible. But we did develop that game, you know, and to be fair, the wee man would have been central to that, because Malloy, you know, and as I said, I was only in the squad for the 2 years, and 1991, Malloy would have a habit, you know, he'd fetch it out of the clouds and maybe just launch it straight away without thinking. Whereas, you know, the wee man, Malloy, you'd see at a couple of clips that he'd be nearly soloing around a circle till Martin would come round the back of him, take it off him, and then once McHugh was on it, then I knew then that was my time to make the run, you know. So it did develop, and obviously the running game, where it wasn't, a lot of people didn't like it, but hey, Colin, we had very, very good natural footballers like Noel Hegarty, Barry McGowan, two cornerbacks, would have played most of their football out around midfield at club football, so natural on the ball. So it was probably a big advantage to us that a lot of our, from 1 to 15, every player was very, very comfortable on the ball, you know, and that's why our game developed, that we were, you know, we developed into a possession type team, but with the added plan B, that they could drive it in to me, and hopefully I would be fit to win it and pop it off to the two corner forwards, and that was really where it developed.
Yeah, isn't it unbelievable watching it back? Because I remember, like, distinctly Donegal having a different style to all the other teams back then and using the hand pass a lot more. And Colm O'Rourke said in the commentary, if you heard it yesterday, it was a classic. It really stuck out for me. It was after three hand passes In your back line, he says, again, a problem there for Donegal. Three players had to hand pass it in the back line before anyone kicked it. No reason why the ball couldn't have been got forward much quicker. So this was after three very positive hand passes. It ended up with Anthony Molloy, who gave a bad ball into you. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that was the, if you were to imagine Colm O'Rourke back then was seeing a game, you know, from the future, like on 15 years, he looked like he moved the ball incredibly fast compared to what we've been used to.
I know, absolutely. And I would say, Colm, as well, if you remember the 92 Ulster final, John Cunningham was sent off just before half time, and we went into that second half again against the Wandon Clonus, against Derry, a very good Derry team. And again, it was the wee man, you know, speaking at half time after McInniff had spoke that the important thing, we couldn't give away the ball, we couldn't kick the ball away, because if we kicked the ball away against 15 men, we were going to be on the back foot. And that was probably a better performance in that 35 minutes in the second half in Clonus, where we held on to the ball and kept it short without kicking the ball away, you know. And I would agree, like, and I remember laughing when I heard Colm saying that, like, it wasn't the done thing, that listen, you get it and you kick it whatever way you're facing. But Donegal, as I said, had 15 natural footballers from 1 to 15 that were very, very comfortable on the ball, and I didn't feel the need just to boom it up the field. Well, maybe bar Rambo would give an odd would send one into the clouds now and again, but it definitely was the time where maybe football in Donegal started to change around the early 90s.
Yeah, no, listen, it definitely was. Come here, you mentioned that you made your debut against Armagh, the Ulster final. You made your first ever start in an All-Ireland semi-final. What age were you? 19, 20, walking into Mark McLyons?
Yeah, that was my first start, Colm. And listen, it was, as I said at the start, I thought, this is great. If this is what playing for Donegal seniors, because as I said, listen, Colm, I played minor and I played on the 21, but I would have been playing, any time the seniors would have been playing, I would have been playing soccer with the local soccer club, so I wouldn't have seen Donegal playing a senior game. I think I've seen them once before I actually started playing with them myself. So it was an unbelievable start to have the honour to get, or be backed by McLyons, you know.
But did you know who McLyons was then?
I did. No, I would have known, because funny enough, on the lead up to that semi-final, Colm, the amount of phone calls that I got that week, people, passing on the best wishes and giving me advice and that, but you had people saying, don't look into his eyes when you go down, don't shake his hand, don't do this, don't do that. And to be fair, hey, Colm, and I said it, and lucky I was lucky enough to meet Colm or Mick at an All Star some years later. I walked down and Mick was standing I always remembered on the 14-yard line on the hill. They were defending the hill, and he was just staring out, and he just stared straight out. So I on my head, am I going to shake his hand? So I decided if he offered his hand, absolutely I'll shake his hand. But if he's not going to offer his hand, I'm not going to offer my hand. And he didn't, and stood beside him. But I have to say, listen, that 60 minutes or 70 minutes, Colm, Mick never hit one dirty stroke, never opened his mouth. When you were in possession, he hit you with everything that he got, you know. But I remember meeting him afterwards, and I apologized to him that I didn't offer him my hand, because I was, I suppose, first ever game, you were a wee bit wary if he'd done something that you didn't know how you'd react to, and it could put you on the back foot, you know. But it was a nice place to make your debut, that's for sure.
No, definitely. Why, did he have a reputation for like squeezing your hand or maybe giving you a dig as you shook it? Was this kind of going through your head?
Listen, I don't know, but that's what people were telling me, you know. And I think people were being genuine and giving you best wishes. So I just didn't listen. I didn't want to do something that might have sort of upset me or got for him to get in my mind. But to be fair, as I said, Mick never opened his mouth, never had a dirty stroke. By God, when you won it, if you won it in front of him, he hit you with absolutely everything he got, you know. But it was and my only regret, I always remember, we played them in the league in Navan then the following year, and I was looking forward, because I had a couple of games under my belt, and I was looking forward to getting, you know, another crack at him. Yeah. I remember then he played midfield that day, and they stuck Martin O'Connell in full back, and that was a different kettle of fish altogether, the great Martin O'Connell. absolutely up and down the field like full backs are now, and I had no intention chasing anyone up and down the field, Colin, that's for sure.
Well, tell me about it, Tony. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother, Colin. All right.
Kamir, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't
want no one in it, man. Okay, so Donegal, 18 points, Dublin, 14 points. And this was a completely convincing win for Donegal. I think Colm O'Rourke said it in the commentary at the end of the game, and he was right. A dominating first half performance outside of the first 10 minutes, and really were in control in the second half as well, other than a little Dublin rally where they got three in a row to put three in it. Donegal by far the better team, Conan.
Yeah, I think so. Again, like, to be honest, I think they had their matchups right all over the pitch. The only place I'd say that they probably didn't have it right, but I don't know what else they could have done, is Matt Gallagher was really struggling on Vinnie Murphy. Yeah. Like, you mentioned Joyce McMullen there, Mark, like, on Curran, because that was interesting at halftime. Like, obviously McMullen had a quiet game in the first half. He came and hit it a big way on the ball in the second half, but like Jerry Canning was talking about him, or talking about Curran having an easy day so far. It's like, no, like McMullen's there to stop Curran going forward. Like, so I think all over the pitch, they had it right.
Yeah, no, they definitely. Vinnie Murphy was a freak of nature. Like, I mean, when you think back on what that man was doing. Now, he was such a freak of nature that Dublin arguably would play better with it without him in the team, because they became so predictable and so one-dimensional that it just became so obvious what they were trying to do. And you had Anthony Molloy and you had Brian Murray at times going back, standing in front of him. Vinny still catching it over him, but then Vinny being surrounded by about five defenders.
Yeah, like it's interesting. Like, I was thinking about this like when I was watching this. Like, it, obviously, they just kept putting it in top of him, right? So it was predictable and it was just one-dimensional, as you say. But it kept working. Like, you know, even with Molloy going back, Vinnie Murphy just kept winning the ball, or like a break would go to somebody. On one hand, I was thinking this is a bit of a waste of all the players that Dublin have, like Sheedy and Farrell, who were like, you know, they're class players and you probably could have used them a bit more, but it never didn't work. Like, it wasn't like a wasted ball into Murphy. They always seemed to have a chance out of it. So I don't know, as long as it was working, I would be thinking, like, just keep putting it in on top of them. Like, it's still holding up.
Yeah, and even Desi Farrell caught one in the first half and scored a point, and that was meant for Vinny as well. It's just what I'd say. Noel Hegarty couldn't believe that it was Desi after catching it, because I think it was from Eamon Heery. Jeez, they really went to. But the keep bar freeze, they were just perfect floaters for Vinny, like, who just got so far off the ground, it was unreal.
Yeah, like that's such a, like, you don't see a tactic like that nowadays where the centre back's putting the ball on the ground and drilling it far and high into the full forward. Like, that's your main source of attack, like, and it's a deadly one. And as you said, like, they couldn't answer, like, Vinnie Murphy. I was talking about Matt Gallagher there. I don't know what else I would have done, because I don't think anybody would have coped with him. And Gallagher, in fairness, was strong on the ground, and Murphy, like, wasn't, like, you know, turning and getting a shot at goal. But he just seems to have this, like, he's not that big, is he? Like, he just seemed to have this, like, impeccable timing. Like, he was always up at the very highest point at the perfect time, you know what I mean? He was catching the ball as high as he could every time.
No, it was. It was timing, because he's not. I'd actually say I could be taller than him. I don't want to.
Really?
I've met him. He's not tall. He's short enough. It's just the height he gets up and the timing. Unbelievable. He did an unbelievable game. I was talking to Tony Boyle there about Colm O'Rourke's quote in the first half. It was absolutely, when you hear quotes like this, because we had a similar one with Michael Deignan on the Hurling Show last Thursday. Here's a Colm O'Rourke quote. Again, a problem there. Donegal, three players had to hand pass it in the back line before anyone kicked it. No reason why that ball couldn't have been got forward much quicker. This was after three hand passes by defenders, all positive, none sideways or backways, all forwards. And it ended up getting to Anthony Molloy, who kicked a bad pass to Tony Boyle. So they actually worked it up to midfield to get a nice ball into the forwards. And Colm O'Rourke goes, this is outrageous. What are they doing wasting their time without putting their boot through it?
Yeah, and he wasn't alone, because, like, Jared beside him, he said Donegal's possession game isn't everyone's cup of tea. And I was like, what? Like, what's going on? And like you're right, like they were humping it. Like Gary Walsh, like he was literally kicking the ball 65 yards every time he had the ball on his tee, or wasn't even the tee back then. And then, like, yeah, they worked the three midfields sometimes, but then they just lumped it in, and then they let the two boys and they let McHughes get off the shoulder. Like, they had no problem, like, unleashing it. A lot, like, sometimes too much, where you're thinking, ah, there's nothing on there. Like, they kicked the thing in.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable when we go through the times we went through of the possession game and the backwards hand passes, you know, to think that what Donegal were doing in 1992 was a possession-based type of game. It's just unbelievable the way the game went. They were Donegal were kind of unorthodox for the time, though. Like, I mean, Tony Boyle always stayed inside. Manus Boyle could be found out drifting out. Declan Bonner always drifting out. The two wing forwards are very, very, very work-orientated forwards, you know, who were all over the place. And then Martin McHugh kind of dropping into midfield at times as well. It was a little bit unorthodox for the time.
Yeah, and see, to be honest, actually, I thought they're like the possession game, quote unquote, actually could have hurt Dublin more if they had to use it more. Like once Cunningham came on in the second half and Malloy started running, Tim McHughes came deeper for the ball, he started running at them, McMullen got into it. Like Dublin didn't really know what to do because these boys were running past the markers and then getting in behind. And like it was, in context of 1992 and in context of most of that game, it looked completely different where these boys were just running at them and then they were finding passes easier. Like, I probably started laying the groundwork to start changing the game throughout the 90s.
Yeah, but Barry Cunningham coming to midfield in the second half was a huge one. I thought this was massive because McHugh missed an early free, and you can clearly see on the camera Keith Barr trash-talking Martin McHugh, and Keith Barr is this, you know, cocky dub, brilliant centre-back and all these things. Martin McHugh made Keith Barr respect him so much in the first half that Barr started following him all over the place then, man-marking him. And Barry Cunningham got that free in the second half, completely wide open in the middle that he's just bursting down through because Keith Barr had gotten to the point where I just have to mark this fella.
Yeah, I thought that was a brilliant battle, though, because like, Barr was struggling with McHugh's runs and McHugh gets on the ball and turns, but I thought, like, you know, Barr had a massive interception on him in the first half and it looked like McHugh might have been going through. He won a lot of kickouts from John O'Leary. Like, you know, and then we talked about his freeze and Vinnie Murphy. Like, that was a really good battle with those two, I thought. Like, you know, I don't know who even edged it because I thought Barr still had a massive game himself.
Yeah, he got on a lot of ball and he was actually targeted by Donegal. He was fouled a good few times early in the game when he got it. But Donegal, after the missed penalty, Donegal just completely took over in midfield. Like, I mean, Brian Murray was outstanding. Now, a bit wasteful with some of his kicking, but sure, can you be critical of that when that was the kind of, you know, the game back then? And Anthony Malloy, he was outstanding the whole way through the game. But John O'Leary's kickouts just were coming straight back in on top of him. You know, like, I mean, Donegal were really flying at that stage. Martin McHugh got a good point. Then from the next kick out, Declan Bonner stuck it over the bar, you know, and like it was all Donegal at that stage.
Well, did you think that, so Paul Beeling came on and he was good, right? But did you think that was almost like the Vinnie Murphy effect in midfield, where I think that worked against Dublin in a sense? Like, it was like John O'Leary kept going long to him then because he had a big man in the middle of the pitch, but actually, he was more effective when he was picking passes out to Keith Barr or Jack Healy coming short. And like O'Leary was finding these boys on the wing, but then once they had a big man in the middle, he started looking for him. And as you said, like Donegal's midfield had taken over at that stage. So I don't know, it sort of worked against him, I thought.
Yeah, although Beelan did make a difference I thought Beelan definitely made a difference from kickouts in the second half. That was a very obvious change that they made, that they really had to make.
Yeah, they were struggling before then, I suppose.
But even from the Donegal kickouts then, like they needed someone who could compete with these two Donegal midfielders in the air. They didn't seem to have anyone in the first half at all.
No, and it was interesting. Like you probably have a better handle than me back around 1982. But somebody said in commentary beforehand, they're much maligned Dublin midfield just before the game. So like I don't know, were they being criticised before the match or not?
Yeah, well, Paul Clark was a wing forward in 1995 when they won it. You know, he would have been more of a. He wasn't a fetching midfielder anyways, you know. I don't know too much about the other midfielder, but they were definitely roasted in the first half. Donegal had two goal chances as well. James McHugh off the post after a long ball by Declan Bonner, and then a brilliant move for the Manus Boyle point, which should have been a goal. It was a brilliant long clearance by Martin Gavigan. Now, I'm going to say it was a pass, a long, long pass. He found Bonner on the half forward line. It was one of the longest long pass and the highest long passes he'll ever get. But it bounced straight into Bonner's stomach or chest. So I'm saying that was a pass. Then he hand passed to Malloy, who was running off his shoulder. Then another pass into Tony Boyle, hand passed it across to Manus Boyle, and it went a point off the crossbar. That was beautiful football in any era.
Yeah, and that was a big hand pass as well from Malloy into Tony Boyle, like one of those big thumps. But that's what Donegal had, especially for that move. Like, they had boys coming off the shoulder. Like, it was just textbook stuff. Like, and that's probably textbook again in any era. Like, every time the ball went in, however long it was, somebody was coming off the shoulder, if it was a half forward or a full forward. Like, so, like, they sort of connected the dots really well, I thought.
Yeah, we did myself and Connor did the 1996 replay last Thursday. And this was a much higher quality game than 96, even though it was 4 years before. You know, the 96 was wind and rain, you know, and it was a replay, so there was a lot of tension on it. But seemed to be a lot more kicking the ball away in that Meade-Mayo game in 96 than there was in 1992. I think this was a very, very good quality game, a top class All-Ireland final at this time.
Yeah, it definitely was. Maybe what helped that as well, like, you had just such strong forwards who were all able to hold their own. Like, they were almost like hurling forwards, like, you know, where they were solid and they had a good core and they were scrapping for the ball that went in. But in fairness, I think the players had their heads up a lot more, and yes, they were lumping it 60 yards sometimes, but like, there was boys coming. Like, how many times you see Declan Bonner flame hair just coming running out, and like, you know, he was about 10 yards away from his man. I don't know how good the defending was or not, but these boys were all looking and the ball was going into them. It was like, and it was end-to-end as well, I suppose. Like, that's probably always a good thing in any era.
Yeah, just before halftime, like you mentioned, Charlie booted the ball into the stand. Paul Curran was fouled by Joyce McMullen and he kind of stood on his leg. It was a complete accident, and Curran jumped up and kind of punched him. And you could kind of tell that Dublin were starting to get frustrated. They were starting to get a little bit rattled. And then Martin McHugh got a great point. And you could clearly see on the camera Barr coming back out to mark him. And not a dicky bird said by Barr at this stage. Do you know what I mean? Like, the dynamic of this game has completely changed.
That was the stuff. Like, see, when you combine all that stuff, like how early that they started getting very frustrated, Dublin. Like, remember, Donegal didn't go ahead until 20, 25 minutes or something. Like, Dublin got frustrated very, very quickly. And when you combine that with their bloody open top bus celebrations and stuff, it did seem that they were probably complacent and didn't expect such a big test. And like, once things started going wrong, it was very hard for them to put it right, because like, you saw like a lot of them individually just complaining at different times.
Yeah, no, I think in the second half, Dublin probably started going for goals a little bit too early, didn't they? Charlie Redmond did it twice. Finney had forced one, kind of trying to walk it into the goals off his left. And it was almost like, relax, do you know? Like, I mean, they had lost their kind of game at that stage, I think Dublin did. And actually, a feature of the second half, Manus Boyle had a block on Mick Deegan. Martin McHugh was in his back line. A lot of their forwards ended up in the backs and, you know, kind of, I don't know, Dublin were kind of thrown out of kilter by Donegal in the game.
Yeah, I think so. And with the Dublin had to put Heary back on Declan Bonner, but then Sir Declan Bonner was still happy enough to follow him the whole way back, although Heary got a nice point out of it. But once they got the front, yeah, they were just seeing the thing out. The boys were working hard. And I think that the fact that the Dublin lads were getting frustrated probably fed into the Donegal mentality as well, that they usually had them on the ropes.
Yeah, they definitely did. I thought for Declan Bonner's winning point, Paul Curran, very, very poor defending. He completely, well, it wasn't really a winning point. It was more the insurance point rather than the winning point. Paul Curran completely rushed in, knowing that Declan Bonner's strongest leg was his left. And Declan Bonner just cuts back in on it and scores that point.
I think that's what they call, even though he's a wing-back, that's what they call a forwards tackle, where you're just trying to be seen to be making a tackle. And like, you don't have to do anything after it, so you commit yourself. And you've done your best and you're out of it, so you don't have to keep going. Like, you'd always see a lazy forward doing something like that.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. But it was definitely poor defense. But then again, other than the time Dublin got it back to 3 points, it was the point, 45 by Clark. Then Tommy Carr was out wing back. He set Vinnie Murphy up for one. And then Heary got one. Now, I think it could have been 15-12 maybe at that stage. And it was like, kind of, you're thinking game on. But it wasn't really game on at all in the end.
I don't understand why it wasn't. You see once Paul Clerk, you saw him pinging over two. One was a 45, one was from beyond the 45. Like, you know, they had a lot of, like, weapons in their arsenal. They didn't need to panic. Like, and I've always heard, like, there's this drill that you would do with your team to show that in the last 5 minutes you'll get six chances to score. You know, so you don't need to panic. You know, people think you need a goal, but you'll get six chances even with the other team having the ball and stuff. But, well, that's probably... that's from a few years ago now. People are getting very good at controlling the ball. But, like, back then, like, they could have just kept plugging away. Like, it's once you score one, like, there's 2 points in it, then to kick out. Like, we won that kick out, and then, like, you know, that's the sort of margins that the game goes on. But you're right, I don't know why they kept going back after a goal chance. And they had that panic through the team then, where the passes were wasteful. There was a couple, somebody hit one over the sideline. There was another one trying to hit Vinnie Murphy, and it went out over the end line. And it was just long, rangy passes that were just, they sort of showed off a team that were in panic mode at that stage, thinking that they need to scramble something very quickly, whereas the reality is they had a lot of time.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think Vinnie Murphy had a poor wide in the second half off his right where he kind of hooked it. And when you're this kind of talisman up front where, you know, you're catching these great balls, that's very, very deflating when, you know, somebody brilliant like him kicks a bad kind of wide. Then you have the goal chance misses. It all just looked like it was completely frustrating for Dublin. And Donegal, you know, looked like they were enjoying the game. Dublin looked like the whole weight of the world was on their shoulders.
Yeah, and like, I think probably what swung the whole thing, I know Declan Bonner got the last score, but Manus Boyle got an unbelievable point where he had boys hanging off, and Tony had done good work. But this was just from like one long kick. This Donegal possession game went down to Tony Boyle. He got it to Manus Boyle, and there was boys hanging off him, and they swung it over. And that was just seconds after Charlie Redman had a goal chance. And then Vinnie Murphy just had that really bad wide, as you said. Like, he was about three metres out or whatever, and he pulled it across the goals. And like, off the back of that, Donegal went down and scored this point that looked very hard to be putting away, and they just did put it away. And that was probably the difference, and probably very demoralising for Dublin.
Yeah. Did you like it the way the players lined up in their positions for the national anthem?
I actually had this written down, and I saw, like, you didn't even write that in your notes, but a lot of your notes I had written down the same thing, and that was one of them. The players standing on their own with their opposite number for the national anthem. That's like, I think your day you would have done that a bit as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely did that in my day. Yeah, I remember I think I was saying on the show before, in the 2007 Leinster final, Liam Kearns told us to get down into our positions and let, if Dublin want to line up across the field. Now, it was in vogue. I was looking at the 96 hurling final, and they were in huddles. So it must have changed in around the mid-90s. And in 2007, then we were all waiting in our positions for the national anthem, and we were there ready to eyeball Dublin players coming down to into their positions. And I was like, you own it, and they're coming into it. I thought it was a good bit of sports psychology for Liam Kearns there.
Yeah, there is something very powerful now, though, with Dublin's lineup, and they're just lined up around the 45 or whatever it is, and then you see the big screen, and like these like superstars are the cameras panning across, and I know if everyone's looking up at the flag that's above the big screen, and I always think it looks very imposing and very scary when you see all these Dublin players. Like, and this is what you're coming up against, and just seeing them one by one. If I was Dublin, that's exactly what I would be doing still, just lining up arm to arm. Another team, yeah, that's probably not a bad way of approaching it, like just standing ready for it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see some of them, because let's be honest, there's not much. It's not like, I don't know what I see your point with Dublin, definitely. But is there any difference? What does a team get out of it? Like, I mean, it seems like it was brought in for not really an intimidation factor, more of a morale kind of thing. Let's link arms or whatever. You know, I think it was more, not sure why it started. One team obviously started, and in true GA fashion, everybody just copied it, not knowing why they're doing it.
Yeah, there probably is no real reason for it. Like, I don't think Dublin started it because of that reason. Like, it's one of those ones, you know, where you're told to link in the huddle when somebody's talking. Like, and you don't have to be doing it all the time, and you're told to shut up when you're stretching, when it would actually be good to be talking sometimes. And it's just one of those things. Yeah, it's another way of just like showing that you're under control. This is what we do at this point. Not everybody link arm for the national anthem. Like it's just, it's another way of showing that you're honest, but actually it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Funnily enough, it was very noticeable, the Armagh flags down in the Donegal end. We know Ulster stick together. Yeah. They were beaten by Meath. I think it was 10 points to 2-5. Trevor Giles scored 1-2. So I'm sure, that it's funny when you see 1992 and then these Armagh and Meath players who we all, come to know were in the minor match. I really enjoy watching these old games, I have to say.
That's great. this whole thing is good. But actually, 10 years later, I was at my first All-Ireland final, 2002, Armagh beat Kerry, and Derry won the minor final the game before that. And yeah, like there was loads of Derry fans there, and they were all cheering on Armagh as well. Remember you said that if a team from your county who's on and wins the county title, and like you'd sort of be up for them because they're leash. Would you have that with Leinster at all, no?
Not really. Like, I couldn't see myself. It's hard to know. Like, I mean, you have to go through a lot of years in the doldrums to get to that point where you're hoping your rivals win. And Ulster teams were in those doldrums, so you were in it together. So, like, I mean, definitely not in my playing days. I'd be hoping a team in Leinster would lose rather than win.
Yeah.
Especially if you were beaten or whatever. But, like, I can see where the idea would, come with counties who, if they've all shared an unsuccessful couple of decades where you'd actually start rowing in behind each other maybe or something like that. We're in Leinster, we're just used to Dublin winning now, so anybody all that kind of inter-rivalry is gone because nobody can win anything. Right, come here, we're rambling here. We'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Okay, performance of the weekend, Conan. And first one's Manus Boyle. Absolutely outstanding. He was from play and from freeze. His freeze were, flawless. And interestingly, he was man of the match in the under-21 All-Ireland final. He got 9, I think, that day, and 4 of those were from play. So not a bad record for Manus Boyle to have, to play in 2 All-Ireland finals and be man of the match in both of them.
No, Manus Boyle just one of those players, isn't he? Just like rocks up these big scores and doesn't think twice about it. Like me and you had talked before about like the most we'd ever scored in a game, and like you're down at like 1-3, 1-4, whatever it is. And Manus Boyle just thinks nothing of scoring 9-10 points. Like it's LeBron James stuff back in 1992. And not just a free taker, dead accurate from threes, but like wins his own ball. He's tough, he'll take men on, bit of skill, and just like out of his hand as well. He just curves it over. Like he's a Rolls Royce of a player.
Rose, yeah, and like you're right. Winning your own ball was very important back then, especially in the inside line, because they were bombing in on top of you, and you were no good to anybody if you couldn't win your own ball, or else kind of maybe adapt and get around in front of somebody who could win their own ball. But he won ball over his head. He tracked back and made a block down. It was a complete tour de force performance from him.
Yeah, and there is something in that. Like, so I think obviously we're in a better place now that forwards aren't just being hammered any sort of ball at. Like the players are actually trying to pass it and have a bit of appreciation on the pass for them. But there's almost a happy medium there where it's like, you know, that old thing is let the ball in and we'll try to win it. Like at some stage, like as well, the forward does have to fight for some ball. And like, we talk about if somebody's in the full forward line, you'll play them a riskier pass than you will play somebody in the half forward line or whatever. But like at some level, you do have to play it in and let them try and win it. And if they're not winning it, then can somebody else win a tougher ball? Because if you just keep winning a handy ball, you're not always going to get somewhere.
No, definitely not. And like, I mean, what I don't like about the whole thing, when people give out about the possession game that that we're kind of had for the last 7 or 8 years with backwards passing, they often say, do you want to go back to lumping the ball down aimlessly. And I'm kind of thinking, well, I would actually prefer to go back to that lumping the ball aimlessly, because I enjoyed that. I absolutely enjoyed this game more than any game that I would have seen in most games I've seen in the Championship for the last 8 or 9 years. And plus, often when you talk about the aimless hoofing and all, it was probably 70s, 80s football. You know, when people want to go back to the catch and kick football, it's more the Kerry Tyrone one we saw last week. You know, I think the Naughties probably reached a point where they had the balance of controlled passes in with, you know, predominant kick passing, support running, you know, all those kind of things. Mm. I think that I have my, you know, kind of memory of 1990s football. I think when you look back at Down playing, they were outstanding to watch. You know, I think 90s football, the game was starting to change around more of a focus of getting in good ball, you know, rather than, let's be honest, the 70s, early 80s was a lot of aimless kicking. So the point I'm making is, when people kind of say, do we want to go back to that catch and kick, what era are you talking about? You know, I don't think anybody ever makes I don't think anyone makes the argument to say we want to go back to 1970s or early 80s football.
Yeah, I think hopefully Dublin and Kerry can lead the way in this generation. Like, you know, obviously we had the two All-Ireland finals, which are two of the best games in a long, long time. And that's a minority at the minute. But like, if those two, like look at that game where they have Clifford and Conor Callaghan and Paul Mannion and whoever else are trying to play the ball into them, and they're going to win ball. If you can get that more now coming through, and obviously they're the two best teams, hopefully they inspire the rest of them to follow.
Yeah, they may be doing it. Martin McHugh, he was outstanding as well. Like, I mean, he's right up there for man of the match. Didn't score in the second half, but geez, he was on a lot of ball and he was back tracking. He was doing a lot of donkey work. And like, I mean, talking to Tony Boyle, Martin McHugh was really there. You know, he was their on-field captain. He was their leader. He was the one that spoke in the dressing room. And interestingly, he was saying it was actually against Derry in the 1992 final where they were a man down at halftime, and Martin McHugh stood up after McAniff and he says, we have to hold the ball, we have to play possession football because we're a man down. And that's where they really frustrated Derry and had a famous win against Derry being a man down, because Derry didn't know what to do with a team not driving the ball kind of back 50-50 against them.
That's brilliant. Yeah, he was in the Wars as well, wasn't he? Like, he just he's a hardy player. A hardy player and real skill as well. Like, you know, and like, yeah, one last final ball off the referee at the very end. He didn't let it go. He won that ball. Yeah. The ref had to give up.
Two things about it. He turned the elastic in his shorts down, which I wouldn't be a fan of. And he had the Puma King tongues turned upwards, which I absolutely wouldn't be a fan of either. And it's lucky he was such a brilliant player, because if I saw these two things on a player, I would be like, I'm getting a slap at this fella.
Well, I think if you're that good though, you can do this stuff. Like, you can set the trend. It's when the average players come along and start doing this nonsense, that's when you start worrying.
Yeah, I'm putting Brian Murray, Anthony Molloy and Cunningham, who came on, Barry Cunningham came on in midfield. I'm giving all them a nomination altogether, because throughout the whole game, I thought Brian Murray was brilliant in the first half. Arguably a match. Well, aerially, he was a match for Anthony Molloy. Anthony Molloy was a better all-round footballer, and he got on an awful lot of ball right throughout the game. And then you have Barry Cunningham coming on, a kind of a wrecking ball type of player where you're thinking, Jesus, Murray's gone off. It could be in a bit of bother here. And suddenly you have this complete live wire of a midfielder, a fella that would probably run through you for a shortcut. You know, those kind of lads, the build up, a raw, pure raw kind of player, but was a brilliant ball winner.
Yeah, I can't actually get over how often Anthony Molloy was springing up, like on the ball, off the ball. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know how he covered all the ground that he did. Like, he was just eating up yards for fun. Like, you know, when the ball went in, he was the one that was tasked to go in and double up on Vinnie Murphy at full forward. He was going to full back. And then he was the one in midfield who was dominating, and he was the one that was setting up attacks, like sometimes hand passing this onto a goal chance. So it was unbelievable, like how much ground he covered and did it so well.
No, he did. He definitely did. He was on a load of ball, and it kind of looked like he was always wrecked as well. Like, I mean, we might have to pull this lad off and give him a rest there at some stage. the way he was running. I thought Noel Hegarty did well, even though in a weird way he got on a load of ball. He won a great break for a Boyle free. after Dublin got it back to 3 points. You would say Desi wasn't too bad either, but probably Noel Hegarty would have shaded it. He was one of the young players on the team himself, Hegarty and Tony Boyle. They were the kind of fresh new faces on what was a pretty experienced team at that stage.
Yeah, I'd say there's a good argument. Noel Hegarty's one of the better players than everyone, an all-star. How they look, you know, he was had a good career with Donegal. Like I say, Desi Farrell maybe screwed over a bit by the tactics. Like he probably could have showed more for Dublin than he did. Every time he had the ball, he looked dangerous. But I definitely had Hegarty and John Joe Doherty down just as two like potential performers of the weekend.
Yeah, no, definitely. I suppose for the Dublin side, Vinnie Murphy never stopped trying the whole game. Like if you were an outsider watching that game, you go, God, man, that fella is a freak. Nobody plays football like him. I think Tony Boyle had a very good game as well as a target man in a different way to Vinnie Murphy. Tony Boyle winning everything that was put out in front of him and breaking left and right, whereas Vinnie was another target man, number 14, but played it not in a completely different way. Mostly, actually, his kind of fetches were coming from the Keith Barr freeze.
Yeah, would you have Keith Barr in there as well? Because I thought that he was worth a shout to nomination.
Yeah, I don't know. I think McHugh gave him too much trouble. I think at the end of the day, there's no point in being on a lot of ball if Martin McHugh was running the show. You know,
yeah.
I thought Barr was all right, but at the same time, you know, you're getting roasted there, mate. You know, I don't want to see you getting a hand pat because Keith Barr looked great on the ball. And, you know, but at the same time, if you're centre half back and you're getting run ragged, and then not only was he being run ragged, then he starts following him and leaving the whole centre open. So technically, I don't think he played a blinder, even though he's very good on the ball.
I've got a blind spot for a ball playing centre back. I'll do whatever it takes to get them in the conversation.
We'll do a final next where Kevin Moran is bombing up the field, and you'll really lose your mind altogether. Look, we get performance of the weekend here. Say we have to give it to Manus Boyle, closely followed by Martin McHugh. But Manus Boyle, you'd have to say throughout the game was outstanding. Like, I mean, in the forwards, different array of points from play and from freeze. We didn't even mention Declan Bonner, who was very good as well. He was good. But look, Manus Boyle wins performance of the weekend. So congratulations to him. And that's all we've time for, Conan. We come back on Thursday. We might do another match or we might do a different type of show. I'll decide tomorrow and see what we're going to do. So we'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.